From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks so much for joining us as we take you beyond the headlines to hear directly from our nation's leaders and newsmakers as we pursue the truth on the issues that matter most to you. And we do it all from a biblical worldview. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, and Washington Watch starts now.
There are many people, too many people, and often some elected officials in Washington who have given voice to this idea that we should defund the police or have anti-police legislation or policy. It's absolute madness. And we are now seeing the completely foreseeable result of that in communities around the country with crime off the charts.
That was House Speaker Mike Johnson earlier today marking National Peace Officers Memorial Day. Republicans this week drawing a strong contrast between themselves, the president, and his party on law and order. We're going to talk with Jason Johnson, president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund and former deputy commissioner of the Baltimore Police Department. And we are just 12 days away from the WHO's global power grab. The 77th World Health Assembly starts on May the 27th in Geneva, Switzerland. Can this COVID-induced overreach by the United Nations World Health Organization be stopped? Well, we're going to be joined by someone who's trying. Wisconsin Congressman Tom Tiffany joins us in just a moment. Then, there is no better example of the weaponization of government under the Biden administration for ideological purposes than what his Department of Justice succeeded in doing yesterday in Washington, D.C., securing a 57-month prison sentence for Lauren Handy for peacefully protesting outside a D.C. abortion clinic. We're going to talk with Peter Breen, one of her attorneys at the Thomas More Society. And finally, does the Biden administration not understand the Middle East, or are they intentionally endangering Israel?
We cannot continue into the future by having Hamas retake Gaza. It's not only would be a tremendous victory for Hamas, it would be a tremendous victory for the Iran terror axis, because Iran is trying to envelop us with a noose of death, of which Hamas is one component.
It was Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on CNBC. We're going to talk with Eric Steckelbeck, author and host of Watchmen, later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to miss anything, it's all archived right there, along with action items, TonyPerkins.com. Also, let me remind you, coming up this Sunday, May the 19th, Pray For and Stand With Israel Sunday. To find out more about how you and your church can be a part of this Sunday, simply text the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. With the World Health Assembly quickly approaching, reports indicate that the WHO may be taking steps to water down their proposed pandemic treaty to appease critics. However, the agreement is still a threat to national sovereignty, free speech, intellectual property rights, and your family's health. As I discussed yesterday, this comes as both the United Kingdom and Slovakia have already announced they will not be signing the treaty. Now, closer to home, Republicans in both chambers of Congress have introduced legislation to protect American sovereignty by establishing that any pandemic-related convention or agreement reached by the World Health Assembly be considered a treaty, which is what it is, which would require the advice and the consent of the Senate. But they're calling it an accord as opposed to a treaty to circumvent the Senate. Joining me now to discuss this, Congressman Tom Tiffany, who introduced this legislation in the House, which now has more than 50 Republican co-sponsors. He serves on the House Judiciary Committee and the House Committee on Natural Resources. He represents the 7th Congressional District of Wisconsin. Congressman Tiffany, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's good to join you today.
So give us the latest on your legislation and what it would do.
H.R. 1425, the no WHO bill, is gaining steam, Tony. Every Republican senator has signed on to this bill. We started out with 14 co-signers on the bill. what, a couple months ago. We are now up to 51 members of the House of Representatives that have signed on. So it continues to grow in that way. And it's very heartening to hear what you just had to say, that the UK and Slovakia are saying, we're not going to sign on to this. I hope our negotiators in that represent the United States see the wisdom of that and back off from trying to do this accord, as you call it.
Now, your legislation, as I understand it, would simply require that before this could be binding on the United States, as any international treaty would require, that the Senate has to ratify this. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate, Tony. And that's how it should be. I mean, if we're going to sign an international agreement that is basically a treaty for all intents and purposes, it should have to go through a treaty vote, which requires a two-thirds supermajority by the United States Senate in order to ratify. And especially when you see what happened during the pandemic, when the WHO was warned by Taiwan in late 2019, funny stuff was going on in a lab in Wuhan, China, and the WHO ignored those warnings as well as other things that they've done. We should not be entering into international accords with a corrupt organization that serves at the behest of communist China.
Let me ask you this question, Congressman Tiffany, and I'm serious, because if you can point to something, I'd like to see it. Is there anything that the WHO did during the COVID pandemic that was useful?
I don't think there was a thing. I mean, they fostered this whole notion of, I mean, think about all the things that have been discredited since the whole pandemic policy, you know, whether it's masking, whether it's social distancing, just the jabs that are proving to be having side effects that are affecting people across the world, countries that most of their population did not take the shots, and they have far fewer side effects as a result of countries that mass vaccinated, much like the United States and Western Europe. And the WHO was on the forefront of all of those things. I don't think there was a single thing that they did that was helpful. But that's to be expected from an organization that believes that there should be a one world order.
Let me ask you about that, Congressman, because that's I have multiple levels of concern here. Number one, you're absolutely right. I cannot find a single thing that the WHO did correctly. As you pointed out earlier, they covered for China, basically wasting 30 days, allowing the world to respond to COVID. They are advocating in this accord the silencing of free speech. They want the 194 member states that would be a part of this to suppress speech like the Biden administration did on social media, which has gone to the Supreme Court and been challenged. But underlying all of this is something you just touched on. I'm very concerned that this could be a precursor to one world governance, because there is power with this given to the WHO to declare global health emergencies, and then the power to enforce the provisions that are in this accord.
Yeah, and we're seeing more and more of that over the last couple decades, where people in America and administrations like the Biden administration, that they want to sign on to these international accords that serve as the rule of law for the United States of America. It breaches our sovereignty. And Tony, I just think, you know, as you mentioned in the run-up, I sit on the Natural Resources Committee. We see the same thing there, where they're saying we have to sign on to these international climate accords and various things like that. It breaches American sovereignty. We should not go down that path, because you end America, the rule of law, private property rights, and the founding ideals that made this the shining city on the hill for over 200 years. It ends all of that when we have to be dependent on the governance of this international body. And remember who's going to be driving this. It'll be countries like communist China. It will be right. Iran. It'll be Russia. It'll be totalitarian countries that will drive this.
Congressman, I know that you're going to have to run to vote for just a minute. They're calling votes here, but I want to switch topic here for just a moment. Well, first, before we move to this next final topic, what can people do to help with your bill?
Encourage your representative to get aboard H.R. 1425, No WHO. And it's Congressman Tiffany's bill in the House of Representatives. We have every senator on board. But contact your elected representatives. Tell them to get on that bill so that we are not subject to the whims of international accords that are driven by countries like Communist China.
And folks, to make it easy, you can text WHO to 67742, and we'll have a link there for you. In the Justice Committee, the Attorney General Merrick Garland has refused to turn over information that the Congress has requested. Will there be contempt charges brought against the Attorney General?
We're going to debate that tomorrow in the Judiciary Committee, and I expect that to come out of committee, that we should have a contempt proceeding that continues, because this should be about sunlight for the American people. The American people can handle the truth, and all we're asking for is show the recordings that Special Counsel Hur did with President Biden. Let's see them. The Department of Justice will not release those tapes at this point, and they should release them so that the American people can see what Joe Biden, exactly what he said when he was testifying before the Special Counsel Hur.
Why do you believe they're refusing to release these?
It's hide the ball. It's what they've consistently been doing. This is a game of rope-a-dope that has been going on through this entire session of Congress, Tony, where we ask for information, and then we have to ramp it up in order for people to comply. This includes the FBI Director Wray, and where we just have to steadily threaten greater consequences in order to provide the information. I think we ultimately will get this information because it should not be kept secret.
And this is, I know the Republicans don't have a lot of, in terms of the majority, they don't have a lot of seats to work with. I mean, you've just got a few seats, but this is one of the key tools in the toolbox right now, is to have these oversight hearings and to do what you can to hold the Biden administration accountable. So I commend you for using those. And I also commend you, Congressman, for leading this effort against the WHO and understanding the threat this is to our nation's sovereignty. And I do know you need to go and vote. They're holding a vote right now. And I want to thank you for taking time to join us, Congressman Tiffany. And always great to see you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, Tony.
All right, Congressman Tom Tiffany of Wisconsin. All right, so here's the action items coming out of this. You need to text WHO to 67742. All right, and it'll have a link to take you to a place where you can contact your congressman and be a part of helping stop this pandemic accord. Now, the WHO, they're kind of walking this back, saying people are making things up. They're watering it down. Of course, they've been playing games with the language, constantly changing it. But I'm just going to tell you, bottom line, don't trust them. I don't trust them. And as Congressman Tiffany pointed out, this is global governance. This is setting government. I don't think I need to tell you why that's a bad idea. All right, don't go away. After the break, the weaponization of the Department of Justice. We're going to talk about it. Startling case. Next, don't go away.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins, your host. It's good to have you with us on this Wednesday. Text WHO to 67742 to weigh in on the World Health Organization's global power grab. It's just 12 days away. May the 27th, they'll begin their meeting in Geneva, Switzerland. So text WHO to 67742. Yesterday, a Washington, D.C. district court sentenced pro-life advocate Lauren Handy to almost 5 years in prison for a peaceful protest at a Washington, D.C. abortion facility. Now, Handy is perhaps best known for being among those who discovered the remains of five late-term aborted babies, often referred to as the DC-5, outside a DC abortion facility, the same facility where her protest occurred. This is information the judge barred from being mentioned at her trial. Now, the Justice Department came after her based on the Freedom of Access to Clinics Entrances Act, the FACE Act. It goes back to 1994 when Bill Clinton was president. Since May of 2022, the Department of Justice, when Roe was overturned, they began to accelerate their prosecution of pro-life advocates using this law. Joining me now to discuss this is Peter Breen. He's the executive vice president and the head of litigation at the Thomas More Society, which represented Handy in this case. Peter, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, glad to be with you, Tony. Thank you.
I got to get your reaction to this. I'm stunned by this. How did you respond to yesterday's sentence?
It was a real disappointment. Lauren is really the first person charged and convicted and then sentenced under the Biden administration's harassing new way of prosecuting these peaceful protests. They're using a 10-year felony statute, conspiracy against rights, that was invented to go after the KKK over 100 years ago, and now using it against these peaceful pro-life protesters. And you juxtapose them against the over 100 pro-life churches and pregnancy centers that have been firebombed and vandalized with almost nothing done by the Department of Justice.
Which, by the way, the FACE Act has a provision that also prohibits interfering with church services. That was put in by Orrin Hatch back when this law passed back in the mid-90s. That's never been used. I'm wondering, Peter, if in the appeal, and I do understand you're going to appeal this, that the fact that this law has been on the books for all these years and never used until the Biden administration specifically said they want to go after pro-lifers after the overturn of Roe. Is that a factor?
Imagine this. If this were a legitimate tool, wouldn't the Clinton administration or the Obama administration, you know, the most pro-abortion administration prior to this one, wouldn't they have used it? Absolutely. But instead, this is a tool that is not used for this, is not meant to be used for peaceable public demonstrations like these. I mean, look, you know, the traditional way you deal with folks doing civil disobedience is they get a trespass charge, you get a slap on the wrist, and, you know, that's that, and they move on. I mean, we've been through in the last 5 years or so, I mean, our cities have been burned, and people weren't even charged. And now we're looking at people that peaceably came into a late-term abortion facility where we think we've got evidence of illegal abortions, and not just abortions, but actual homicides, you know, of little children that were born. And our folks are getting 5 years in a federal penitentiary for that? Well, that makes no sense.
Peter, you don't have to go back 2 years. You just need to go back a couple of days to look what was happening on some of these college campuses, Columbia University, where they're breaking into buildings, occupying buildings, destroying property, and at most get a slap on the wrist or maybe expelled from school. Not looking at 5 years in prison for peacefully protesting and advocating for the protection of the unborn. I mean, if this does not show how the Biden administration has weaponized the law and the federal enforcement through the Department of Justice, I don't know what does.
And I'll tell you, the one upshot of this, so, you know, the first case that the Department of Justice brought was against Mark Houck, you know, right. The father in Pennsylvania whose home was raided by 20 heavily armed federal agents. And we were able to secure a not guilty verdict for him in the federal district court in Philadelphia. And so they started there, and now they've gone after people utterly peaceable for these, you know, looking for multi-year sentences. You know, the American people are seeing what's going on. And I've never seen so much sensitivity, both at the political leadership and in the American people. They're seeing this, and I think it's getting through. And so if there is a silver lining to this, the people of America are waking up and seeing this sort of thing. And it is driving them to understand the Biden administration is misusing the government. They are not fit to be at the, you know, the levers of power with this sort of an attitude and with these sorts of actions.
I do pray that they are seeing the realities of this. If I'm not mistaken, Peter, the Thomas More Society also represented six pro-lifers in Tennessee that were charged under the FACE Act. I think they were convicted. They've not yet been sentenced. Is that correct?
Yes. And so we've got a similar situation in Tennessee. There's another one in Michigan as well. And our client in Tennessee is Paul Vaughn, who was just he's a dad of 11 kids. He's just a regular guy who was there. In fact, he didn't even block the door. He was just there for moral support. They swept him in as part of a conspiracy to support a First Amendment protected activity. Now, you know, and so we think we have a strong appeal there, and we are going to take this as far as it needs to be taken, because, I mean, we've seen recently the Biden administration has charged people with laws that were not meant for the conduct charged. And Supreme Court was even looking at this recently. Folks have been keyed into it. So we're very hopeful that we may be able to get at least the felony part, this conspiracy against rights, overturned. I mean, look, Dobbs reversed Roe. There is no right to abortion in America. So why are we now dealing with this conspiracy against rights charge? It makes no sense at all.
Yeah, hopefully you will get a judge who actually understands the law and is willing to uphold the law as it stands. Peter, we're out of time, but very quickly, how can folks help you? How can they stand with Lauren? What can they do?
Well, you can go to our website, Thomas More Society, and that's MORE10, thomasmoresociety.org. You can get on our email list, and that way you can get notifications. You can pray for us. You know, I'll tell you, my attorneys, we feel the power of prayer when folks pray for us. So we very much appreciate that. And then you can keep up on everything going on. And then, you know, and we've got a lot of cases going on across the country.
This well, we're going to encourage people to do that, Peter, and stand with you. Folks, you can check it out at TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch after this.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
To Washington Watch again to find out more about how you can stand with Thomas More Society, one of the legal groups doing wonderful work in defending the rights of Americans, and in this case, Lauren Handy. Go to TonyPerkins.com. You can follow the links over. All right. In observance of Peace Officers Memorial Day, a part of National Police Week, the National Peace Officers Memorial Service took place earlier today at the west front of the United States Capitol. The breakdown of law and order throughout this decade has led to skyrocketing crime, with many American cities just overrun. So far this year, 58 officers have died in the line of duty. Last year, it was over 280. Now, in response, House Republicans will bring pro-law enforcement legislation to the floor this week, highlighting GOP priorities in this election, showing a stark contrast between them and the president and his party. Joining me now to discuss this is Jason Johnson, president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund. He previously served as the deputy commissioner of the Baltimore Police Department. Jason, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
So give us your thoughts on the state of law enforcement. You know, we're a couple years away from the big push for the defund law enforcement. Has the reality of that settled in on many of these blue cities that all of a sudden are maybe finding a new desire to have stronger law enforcement departments?
Yeah, I think we have started to see some cities turn a corner. Some of the prosecutors that have been elected that we call collectively progressive prosecutors or pro-criminal prosecutors that were elected solely for the purpose of finding ways to help people who are actually engaged in criminal activity avoid accountability, certainly avoid incarceration, and those prosecutors have shifted their focus to law enforcement and regulating law enforcement and punishing law enforcement officers in some cases just for doing their jobs. I think we've started to see a little bit of ebb in that. We've seen some of these prosecutors lose their bids at reelection. We've seen some removed by governors, as Governor DeSantis has removed a couple of those prosecutors in Florida. But it does persist, and there are some cities that still have these progressive prosecutors, and new cities are electing them. And so I think we have seen some improvement since 2020, and I think that is shown in the crime numbers. Although crime is very high, some categories of violent crime have begun to stabilize, like homicides and non-fatal shootings in many cities have stabilized or actually have started to come down a little bit.
Jason, let's talk about the long-term effects. Let's say some of these cities that continue to be kind of anti-law enforcement. If you're in that department, you're not going to be really happy about being there when you know the administration doesn't have your back. And what's the long-term effect that's going to have on many of these departments and the community?
Well, I think that we are seeing the phenomenon that you described play out in the form of a real recruiting crisis and a staffing crisis in law enforcement. Just about every law enforcement agency in our country is grossly understaffed. The problem is worse in bigger and bluer cities, where, as you sort of indicate in the question, that young people who are interested in a career in law enforcement may be less interested in serving in a city where there's a higher likelihood of them being sued or prosecuted or really treated poorly, as some cities have begun treating their law enforcement officers. And those same young people who might be excellent candidates to be police officers would instead serve in a suburban or more rural community where they would be more appreciated, more protected, less likely to be mistreated or prosecuted. And so I think we are seeing that. That is happening right now. And in some cities like Baltimore, where I'm most familiar, the staffing levels have reached a crisis. And Baltimore is not alone in that regard.
Well, Baltimore was already a volatile city. And you add this to the mix, it's the residents that suffer.
Well, that's exactly right, Tony. In fact, sometimes in the rhetoric that we hear, particularly coming from the left side of the political spectrum, that there is that urban black citizens don't want law enforcement. They want law enforcement to be defunded. They don't think that policing reduces crime. Actually, if you're on the ground in a city like Baltimore and just about any other city I'm familiar with, you'll find that black residents that live in the communities that are most impacted by crime actually want more police. And the polling data backs us up on that. And so it's really more white progressives that are fighting back against more police. The black residents in the city's areas most affected by crime want more police.
I can testify to that as a former police officer working in those communities. They were always happy to see us there. Very quickly, we're just about out of time, but I was reading the AP this morning, and on this day when we mark Law Enforcement Day, Memorial for Peace Officers, they're advocating for nationalization, federalization, more government, federal government oversight. At a time when we see at the federal level the weaponization, that's not the direction we should be going, is it?
Oh, not at all. And in fact, the efforts that we've seen so far at federalization or increased federal oversight of local law enforcement is in the form of these consent decrees that actually really negatively impact the ability of law enforcement to serve their communities in the cities in which consent decrees exist. And these consent decrees in cities like Chicago and Baltimore and Seattle and New Orleans and still others that the current administration wants to expand to have increased crime, reduced the staffing of police departments and have really encumbered law enforcement officers and agencies from serving.
The local community knows best in most cases. Jason, we're out of time, but always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today, and thanks for your service.
Thank you so much.
Stick with us. We're coming back with more Washington Watch on the other side of this break.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
I invite you to join us this coming Sunday, May the 19th, for our Pray For and Stand With Israel Sunday. To find out how you and your church can join us, text Israel to 67742. And if you're in the Baton Rouge area, I'll actually be preaching this coming Sunday at Jefferson Baptist Church. You can find out more about the service times by going to tonyperkins.com. Our word for today comes from 1 Samuel chapter 7. Then Samuel spoke to all the house of Israel, saying, "If you return to the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the foreign gods and the Ashtaroths from among you, and prepare your hearts for the Lord, and serve him only, and he will deliver you from the hand of the Philistines." You know, Samuel lays out the path for the restoration of their freedom and their peace. Return to the Lord, put away the idols, direct your hearts to the Lord, and serve the Lord only. Then the Lord will deliver you. Think about that for a moment. There are a lot of idols, addictions in our society today. Maybe you're challenged with something that has kept you in bondage, keeping you from experiencing the promises of God. These four steps still work. Return to the Lord, get rid of what gets in the way of God, focus your heart on the Lord, and serve him alone. Simple to state, difficult to do, but profound in its effect. To find out how you can join us in our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. Last weekend, a member of the Iranian parliament, Hamad Ardestani, raised international concerns when he was quoted as saying, quote, "In my opinion, we have achieved nuclear weapons, but we do not announce it. It means our policy is to possess nuclear bombs, but our declared policy is currently within the framework of the JCPOA, end quote. The JCPOA is the abbreviated title of the Iran nuclear deal, which the Trump administration pulled the United States out of, and the Biden administration has been repeatedly trying to resurrect. Well, on Monday, a spokesman for the State Department, Patel, responded with this. Clip
President
it.
Biden, Secretary Blinken will not allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon, period. We continue to assess, though, that Iran is not currently undertaking the key activities that would be necessary to produce a testable nuclear device. And we don't believe that the Supreme Leader has yet made a decision to resume the weaponization program that we judge Iran suspended or stopped at the end of 2003.
Is America naive or what? Joining me now to discuss this is noted geopolitical commentator Eric Steckelback, who has spent nearly two decades covering the Middle East and national security issues in depth and has traveled to the region multiple times interviewing world leaders and wanted terrorists, highlighting threats to the United States and Israel. He's the host of the Israel and Middle East-focused newscast, The Watchman. And he's the author of three best-selling books, including ISIS Exposed. Eric, welcome to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Great to see you, Tony. Thanks for having me.
So let me get your take. The accuracy of this member of the Iranian parliament, is he just blowing smoke or is there something here?
You know, Tony, he's not in the inner sanctum, so to speak, of the Iranian regime that we know of, close to the Supreme Leader Khamenei. They would make the ultimate decision there, the Supreme Leader and the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps. That's the vanguard of the regime. And you would also think that, look, if Iran actually had the bomb, we know they're working towards it despite what the State Department says, that Israel would know. You would think U.S. intelligence would know, but especially Israel. Tony, Israel has carried out many operations inside Iran on Iranian soil over the past several years, eliminating Iranian nuclear scientists. So you would think if it was at that stage that Israel would have already stepped in. I believe that Israel, before Iran is able to actually have that nuclear capability, Israel will act. I'd be completely shocked if Iran announced we do have the bomb, but I would think that Israel has so closely monitored this, Tony, over the years, that Israel would act before it got to that point.
Eric, I tend to agree with that assessment in terms of Israel acting. I was in Israel about a month and a half ago and met with the prime minister. This was before Iran attacked Israel. Were you surprised that, as far as I know, that Israel did not strike at the nuclear facilities when they struck back at Iran?
I was a bit surprised, Tony, not specifically the nuclear facilities, although, look, if Israel wanted to do it, that was a golden opportunity of sorts in that, look, Iran launched an unprecedented attack from Iranian soil against Israel, over 300 projectiles, Tony, launched and miraculously, I don't say that word lightly, 99% intercepted, and yet Israel's response, I believed at the time, I thought would be overwhelming. To send a message to Iran, hey, don't ever do it again. We didn't get that. We got a very limited Israeli response. And Tony, I believe the main reason for that is the Biden administration. Israel has essentially been facing off against Iran and its proxies like Hezbollah, like Hamas, with one arm tied behind its back. Israel's been fighting a war against Hamas like that. And the Biden administration tried everything it could to completely restrain Israel from even responding to this unprecedented Iranian attack.
Yeah, I was surprised. I thought for certain that this would be the opening for them to do that, given that after they had been this unprecedented direct attack on them, in their response, they could take care of business. So I was surprised by that. I do agree, again, with your assessment. But let me ask you about that, Eric. Is the Biden administration's restraining of Israel and their ability to defend themselves, eliminate Hamas, which is actually the least of the threats to them, but it is, I think, more of a probing action, and it's determining the weakness, determination, where the United States is going to stand. I think America is making the situation more volatile in the Middle East by not standing resolutely with Israel. Am I on track?
Tony, I agree with you 100%. You know, it's said that weak men create hard times. And right now we have weakness in Washington, D.C. and in the White House, quite frankly. Not only that, across European capitals as well. And the Iranian regime and its allies are quite literally watching the conduct, the posture of the Biden administration towards Israel, and they're taking notes. And they're salivating at the thought, Tony, of daylight between the United States and Israel. Now, the Biden White House will say, well, hey, there is no daylight. Just look at what happened. We helped Israel intercept those projectiles coming from Iran. We've got Israel's back. And yet, last week, Joe Biden goes on international television and says, you know what? We're going to withhold arms shipments to Israel. We completely disagree with Israel's potential campaign in Rafah, which would finish the job of crushing Hamas. Tony, the world is watching that. And in the Middle East, especially, optics are everything. And the insinuation or the impression that the U.S. is distancing itself from Israel, the likes of Iran, Hezbollah, Hamas, they're watching very, very closely. And they're saying, hey, if we up the ante and we strike Israel continuously and at a larger degree, it doesn't seem like the United States has any stomach to intervene. That's the message that's being transmitted. And when the U.S. doesn't lead and act as a leader of the free world, the world devolves into chaos, and we're seeing that right now in real time.
Eric, I'm concerned that it could be more than ineptitude. It could be intentional. I understand that Israel had committed not to use these 2,000-pound bombs in Rafah, which were being withheld. I mean, you can have agreements with friends and allies. All right, we're going to release all of this because we know you need it for defense purposes, but we don't want you using it here. I mean, you should be able to have that kind of relationship rather than signaling, as you just pointed out, the daylight that would be between us. I think, and you know this region much better than I do, but I think this is putting kind of pushing Israel into a corner. They have to defend themselves. And I think this is going to make them, you know, they're very steady. I trained with IDF. When I was in the Marine Corps and coming out working in anti-terrorism, I've worked with them. They're the best. But when you have experienced what they experienced on October the 7th, and you see the world turning away from you, the rise of anti-Semitism, I'm just saying, I see this as a very volatile situation, a powder keg.
Tony, you're absolutely right. It is an existential struggle that Israel is locked in right now. This is a 1939 moment. I do not exaggerate. Between the gathering storm of adversaries like Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, all coming together, between the rise of, the explosion of anti-Semitism, including right here in the United States, in a massive way, this is a no more precarious moment, I think, Tony, since World War II. That is where we're at. And by the way, Israel's enemies and America's enemies are one in the same. Right. Israel is really acting as the first line of defense for Western civilization. So this would be a time, to me, for the West to get together alongside Israel, a like-minded nation, and to get together and to form an alliance. We have NATO, of course, but NATO, very toothless, as we've seen over the past few years in many ways. So let's get serious as a civilization, as Judeo-Christian civilization, in confronting these gathering threats. If we don't, things will get worse. And right now, there's a complete leadership vacuum. Perhaps that will change in November here in the United States, at least.
So, Eric, we've talked about kind of the geopolitical landscape, the national defense, military issues. Let's talk. How do we look at this from a biblical perspective as Christians, as Bible-believing Christians? What are we to make of what's unfolding?
That's the key, I think, Tony. At the end of the day, this is a spiritual battle, no doubt. And look, there are better political choices than others, clearly, but there's not a political solution here, I don't believe. There's a leadership would help, no doubt, strong, bold, visionary leadership, but this is a spiritual battle, and I believe prophetically— Look, we see prophetic chess pieces moving on the board. Just yesterday, Tony, Israel celebrated its 76th birthday. It was Israel's Independence Day. I believe that when Israel was miraculously reborn in 1948, it sent the prophetic time clock into overdrive. So I don't think as believers we can be shocked at what we see unfolding right now. Evil men are going to do what they do. And the Bible is very clear about that. It's clear that things will get tough for Israel, for the world, but also very clear that God Almighty still sits on the throne and he's in control. And for followers of Jesus right now, for the church, Tony, I believe this can be our finest hour. We can step up and fulfill our biblical mandate to be salt and light, to be ambassadors for Christ, and to lead the way, to shine light in the darkness. That's how I see it spiritually right now. As discouraging as it can be, as believers, hey, let's not have a spirit of fear, but of right. power and love and of a sound mind.
Isn't this a tremendous opportunity, Eric, as well, with the rest of the world turning away from Israel, the rise of anti-Semitism, for us to step in and show support for our big brother, if you will? I mean, we would not have the Christian faith if it were not for the Jewish people. Our Messiah is Jewish. And isn't this an opportunity to speak to them boldly and clearly that we love them because the love of God that is within us? And when everyone else runs away, we're going to run to them and we're going to stand with them.
Tony, you said it. That is the key. Right now, it's very easy to abandon Israel and abandon the Jewish people. It's not very popular right now to be a Jew or an Israeli. And by the way, if for people to consider this, Tony, out of the world's 8 billion plus people, only 15.7 million, that's it, are Jews. This tiny, minuscule people group and their tiny, minuscule nation, the size of the state of New Jersey, according to the growing legions of anti-Semites, are responsible somehow for all of the world's problems. I think as believers, as Christians, this is, Tony, you said it, this is time. Because look, the Jewish people could use a few good friends right now. And a reminder, these are God's people. That's God's land. Our Messiah, right. the Lord Jesus, is Jewish. So right now, if we don't do it, Tony, real simple, no one else is going to do it.
Well, those facts that you just pointed out, the fact that they're less than 1% of the world's population, the fact that that entire country is the size of New Jersey, but yet it occupies the focus of the world and has, tells us there's something more to this than meets the eye, and you cannot see it unless you look at it with spiritual eyes.
Yeah, Tony, very true. It's spiritual. At the end of the day, there's something about this people and this nation. There always has been. This has been going on for thousands of years. Anti-Semitism is the world's oldest hatred. Many nations and empires have come against Israel and the Jewish people. Thankfully, Tony, they've all ended up in the ash heap of history, while Israel, against all odds, completely improbable, continues to survive and thrive. Only God.
Yes, and so I want to stand with God, and I'm going to stand with Israel. I think that's the safest place to be. Eric Steckelbeck, I want to thank you for joining us. Great insight. Appreciate your ministry greatly.
Thanks, Tony. God bless. Appreciate it.
All right. Eric Steckelbeck. Find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. Again, want to invite you to join us for Stand With, or Pray With and Stand With Israel, coming up this Sunday, May the 19th, as Eric was talking about, this is the time that as Bible-believing Christians, we need to pray for the peace of Israel, and we need to stand with the Jewish people. To find out how you can be a part of that, text Israel to 67742. Thanks for being with us today, and until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action.
For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.